this is what you're fighting for. I mean, every day you're out there.
What they're doing is blowing people off.
If you continue to look the other way and shut up, then the oppressors, the authoritarians, get total control and total power. Because this is just like in Arizona. This is just like in Georgia. It's another element that backs them into a corner and shows their lies and misrepresentations.
This is why this audience is going to have to get engaged. As we've told you, this is the fight.
All this nonsense, all this spin, they can't handle the truth.
War Room, Battleground. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
In the new world of mass migration, the most pervasive, important, and dangerous conflicts will not be between the social classes. They will not be between the rich and the poor. They will be between peoples belonging to different cultural entities. Tribal wars and ethnic conflicts will occur within civilizations. Well, boy, was he right. And the worst part is, we as a society seem to have become indifferent to it. When another white boy or white girl dies at the hand of an immigrant, we might shake our head, we might let out a sigh, we might even get angry for a minute or two, and then we go on with our lives. We offer the family thoughts and prayers, but nothing ever changes. Ladies and gentlemen, what does that say about us? This is the sign, this is a response of a society that has already given up, a society that has already accepted its defeat. But is this true? Have we given up? Do we really accept the new reality that our globalist leaders have in mind for us? I know one thing for sure. And that is that if nothing changes, if we don't start to seriously fight for our continent, for our religion, for our people, our countries, then this time that we live in will go down in history as the time in which Western nations no longer had to get invaded by hostile armies in order to be conquered. This time will then go down in history as the period in which the invader was actively invited in by a corrupt elite. And not only did this corrupt elite invite the enemy in, they made the native population pay for it too.
It's Tuesday, 30 April, the year of the Lord, 2024. Thank you and welcome back. This is the early evening edition, and I want to thank everybody who's been with us all day. Quite intense. Honored to have Ava Vlaart Dingerberg, one of the most powerful speeches I've seen or heard in a long time at CPAC Hungary, picked up by Remix News and then picked up by Zero Hedge as their lead story over the weekend. Ava, walk me through your theory of the case. I want to go back and let's do it again because it's so powerful. And quite frankly, as much as we cover it, no one has said the quiet part out loud. You said the most brutal reality, that you think some of the nations of Europe that have the longest heritages, some of those powerful institutions, that the people may have already given up or quit. So walk me through your theory of the case of what's happening in continental Europe with this mass migration and really the end of what could be the white race in Europe.
Hi, Steve. Thank you so much for your kind words and for having me on your show again. I'll walk you through quickly, if you allow me, through the makeup of my speech. It was 12 minutes long. Anybody who wants to watch it, it's pinned to my profile on X. What I started out with basically was saying, ladies and gentlemen, I want to walk you through 1 week in Europe, the past 7 days. And I mentioned a few incidents, right, as they call it, where immigrants stabbed people in the streets, caused riots, etc. These types of, you know, basically our new reality in Europe is what I said. We experience extreme crime, rapes, beheadings, killings, you know, murders, bombings, shootings, and all of this is a newly imported problem. That's what I called it. And then from there, I said, okay, how come, you know, what happened here? And then I listed some statistics from my home country saying, look, in the major cities in the Netherlands, the native white Christian population is already outnumbered due to these policies that our corrupt elite has had for the past few decades, which obviously is the open border policy. And I basically said, look, we are going to a point of no return here where our civilization is no longer recognizable. And unless we turn that around, unless we counter that narrative, start to speak very freely and openly about this, and also say, no, we want the antidote, we want a strong Christian Europe of nation states, then nothing is going to change. And sadly, I gave that speech just a few days ago in Hungary at CPAC. And just today, there was another man who started stabbing random people in the streets of London, and a 14-year-old boy died. And yesterday, an Afghan migrant stabbed a 15-year-old boy in France. So it really proves that this is, you know, something that happens every day in the new Europe.
With the rise of social media, and you know this because you're one of the leading voices in this movement, the mainstream media doesn't want to report this when these incidents happen. When they don't report who they are right away, you can already guess, and it always comes true that it's some migrant. But why, with the rise of social media, and we have the rise of the populist right, the rise of the sovereignty movement, the rise of the nationalist movement, but given how far it's gone, the way you describe it, why has the political process not caught up with the elites? Why have we not had the overthrow of more of these governments that have just gone along with the party of Davos, have just gone along with Soros? I mean, you have it in Hungary. You have other aspects, you know, in France right now, you see the rise of Le Pen's Front National, or their new title. You see it in other countries, particularly Netherlands. But you haven't seen, given you're saying we're at the edge of the abyss, you haven't seen the uprising that you would sense that people would do if they just logically said, hey, our country's going to be destroyed on my nickel. I'm paying for this. And my children and my grandchildren are not going to be exist in this country. Why has the political revolt not been stronger?
I think in Europe, people are still afraid, and I'm not surprised. You know, I gave this speech and it went absolutely viral on X, first of all, because I'm now allowed to say these things on X, right? But before Elon took over, it really was almost impossible to say anything about these matters on social media without being banned, right? And that is just on social media, but in real life, the responses are the same. You're called a Nazi, a fascist, far-right extremist, all of these things. And we're kind of used to that at this point. But it happened again when I gave the speech. And I think I said the forbidden truth out loud, which is something that everybody can see with their own eyes in Europe, but is still afraid to say. And that is, look, guys, we are being replaced. You know, the white native population of Europe is being replaced at an ever accelerating rate. And if we don't turn this around, Europe won't exist anymore. And that's, of course, something that people are still very, you know, they're hesitant to say this because, well, all of the responses that you get if you do. But I figured it's about time, because now either it's you're called a racist, but we call out the truth and we say something about what is happening to our continent, or you don't, and then the civilization ceases to exist. So for me, the choice was obvious. But yeah, the response has not been mild, so to say, from the establishment. And I think that's something that people are still afraid of, and that is also why the political response has not completely caught up with the reality yet.
Okay, we had Jeremy Carl on I think we had him on Thursday or Friday, and then we had him back on yesterday. He's written a book that's quite explosive over here called The Unprotected Class, How Anti-White Racism is Tearing America Apart. And in that discussion on both days, I alluded to, there's a number of sites, I guess you would call these folks ethno-nationalists. It's very well produced. They have very good documentaries getting into the details. But they continue to argue, right, that this is lined up against the white race. And I make the point that it seems to me more about money and power, because the people putting this on the white race happen to be white, happen to be Caucasians. They just happen to be in power. And this is mainly going against middle class or working class whites. You make the argument, I think, the way I read your speech, you're saying, Steve, you are kind of missing it. It's not really the two classes. It's not about class. You're going to get these kind of ethnic wars inside the country because the elites have invited these people in. Is your argument kind of support more what I would call the ethno-nationalist point of view or mind that it's really not. It's because it's whites that are, if you look particularly in Europe, these are all whites that are imposing. It's kind of that book Camp of the Saints, where the white elites don't know how to handle this and they just invite people in. And then when it's a mess, they kind of step back and say, it's not my problem. And it's these racist whites' problem.
Right, right. Well, no, my speech, you just showed that clip, started out with a quote from Samuel P. Huntington. So that wasn't those weren't my words, actually. I was quoting Samuel P. Huntington, who said, predicted 25 years ago, look, the new clashes that we will see in civilization will not be between the rich and the poor, will be because of mass migration between people of different cultural entities. So that was the quote that I was citing right there. And I agree with you that I think that mass migration is used by a predominantly white elite, actually, a corrupt elite, as I referred to them, to cause divide and conquer within society. But the fact of the matter is that there is a very strong anti-white sentiment that these people have either consciously or subconsciously adopted that I think comes from this neo-Marxist, you know, critical race theory type of thinking, where they now divide the world no longer in the social classes, like between the poor and the rich, but they see the white people as the oppressor and the immigrants or any type of minority as, per definition, the oppressed, right? So that is the theory that I was explaining here. But I definitely agree with you that I think that it's predominantly actually these neoliberal, globalist, left-wing white people that are pushing this theory. But they're not just pushing the theory, they're also pushing the policies. And the policies are real. We are being replaced. And that is, you know, a very, I think, visible reality now in Europe, that you can tell that the demographic makeup has changed beyond, well, what I think would say belief, but it is reality, right? So I think we should call out both things, and both things can be true at the same time.
That quote is from that great book, Clash of Civilizations. You're absolutely correct. I remember after 9/11, everybody was saying, all the media, no, this is not a clash of civilizations. This is just a misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. I want to go back. If you look at the end of World War II, right, and the beginning of the European Union, and really what I would say was the focus on taking away the sovereignty of the individual nation states, although I would think most fighting men and women in the United States that actually participated and fought to help save Europe would say, no, we're really fighting so those people can be free within their own nation states as sovereign citizens, as individual citizens. How do we get to the point? What happened to the elites in these countries that really took on an anti-white, you know, sentiment? What was it about these elites that really their target of their frustration were their own countrymen? And they actually pushed for these laws. And I would go back to after the Syrian Civil War when I was at Breitbart, and the insanity happening in Germany at that time of inviting these migrants in, essentially unvetted. And you saw it over and over again. And I would mention the book, The Camp of the Saints. And I said, hey, the book's got some very tough sections to it. They're going to turn a lot of people off. And a lot of people are going to say it's a racist book. But the underlying concept of the book from the French author is quite powerful about how he saw this back in the 1970s. In France at Cannes, when he had the idea to write this book, that the elites in and of themselves have somehow turned to be anti-white and anti their own countrymen. How did that happen, mm-hmm. given that we fought for freedom of the nation state in World War II?
I think there is an internalized white guilt as a result of the atrocities that happened during the World War, the Second World War, that is used and weaponized against people who have very valid, very normal, conservative, you know, ideas, who agree with the idea of a nation state, who don't think that there are 73 genders, you know, I would say just ordinary people who believe in traditional ideas, traditional values, Christianity. And if you have a globalist elite that wants to control everything that we do, everything that we say, everything that we eat, everywhere that we go, you know, you can't have a strong nation state with people who know where they come from. You quite literally need to uproot them in order to install what we, you know, call this new world order. So that attack makes sense, right? And in my speech, towards the end of my speech, I said the antidote to all of this is a strong Christian Europe of nation states. And the first thing that we need to do, therefore, is counter this outright lie that nationalism and national sovereignty or national pride causes war. I think that that lie has been very, very prevalent and has been spread throughout our academia, for example, after the world wars, saying, look, if we want to avoid a third world war, now we have to get rid of everything that is somewhat traditional or that is somewhat close to nationalism. And it has become a dirty word as a result of the Second World War. And I think that this is false. I think that expansionism is what causes war, and that only in places like Europe and Brussels, nowadays, you can find that. You know, you find that with the globalists. You find that with this corrupt elite that I'm attacking in this speech, not with people who want strong nation states, not with people who appreciate conservative values, but with those neoliberal globalists that we find represented in undemocratic institutions like the European Union.
You've now touched the third rail, really, in American politics. CNN did a whole special the other night. We streamed it and watched it with the War Room Posse, and of course, a lot of people were turned off by it about misinformation. But the heart of it, when you with the reporter Donnie O'Sullivan, I think it is Donnie O'Sullivan, who really focused on the Christian nationalism piece of it, they would say immediately that you're just a radical Christian nationalist, and what you want to do is really bring back everything that caused all the wars, that caused all the conflicts. It was Christianity, and once you had it tied to kind of the unwashed masses, this led to conflict and mm-hmm. the war. Why? First off, are you a Christian nationalist, and do you see the side of the other side of the argument?
Well, I'm a Christian and I'm a nationalist, so I don't know if that makes me a Christian nationalist. But honestly, Steve, I don't really care what type of label people put on me. You know, everyone in the world can go and see exactly what I said and exactly what I believe in this speech. And then the labeling, the name calling, the whatever, it really is of no interest for me anymore. I know exactly what I believe. People want to know what I believe, can go and listen to me straight from the horse's mouth rather than, you know, whatever the media or whatever any establishment will say about me, because they've done nothing but lie about me as long as I've, you know, been speaking out about these things. And now my speech is maybe more radical, you know, than it was, than the things I said 4 years ago in their eyes, but they called me the same name. So I've stopped to care, honestly.
Hang on for a second. I want to play a clip from Scotland yesterday and get your take on it.
That 99% of the meetings I go to, I'm the only non-white person in the room. But why are we so surprised when the most senior positions in Scotland are filled almost exclusively by those who are white? Take my portfolio alone. The Lord President, white. The Lord Justice Clerk, white. Every High Court judge, white. The Lord Advocate, white. The Solicitor General, white. The Chief Constable, white. Every Deputy Chief Constable, white. Every Assistant Chief Constable, white. The Head of the Law Society, white. The Head of the Faculty of Advocates, white. Every Prison Governor, white. And not just Justice. The Chief Medical Officer, white. The Chief Nursing Officer, white. The Chief Veterinary Officer, white. The Chief Social Work Advisor, white. Almost every trade union in this country headed by people who are white. In the Scottish Government, every Director General is white. Every chair of every public body is white. That is not good enough.
Now, he was just turfed out, but he was the head, essentially, of the Scottish Nationalist Party. What is your take on thing about it? He put forward the most incredibly over-the-top and insane hate speech law, which also is infecting Europe. What is your take on someone that proposes to be the leader of a nationalist party, but is obviously anti-white?
I mean, it's insane. What's wrong with those people being white? What's wrong with having people in those positions in a country like Scotland that has been predominantly and historically white for its entire existence? Tell me, you know? Why is that wrong? And this is the question that I asked somebody who interviewed me after the speech I gave. It's like, turn the question around with these people. Let them explain why suddenly we have to become a minority in our own countries on our own continent. I don't think that that is a given, you know, and I don't want to be pointed as the root of all evil or somebody who has to be replaced because of the color of my skin. You know, why is that suddenly accepted? You would never hear this in an African country. You would never hear this type of rhetoric in Asia. And I think it's time that also white people in their own countries and their own continent start to reject this type of rhetoric, which clearly this man, you know, is filled with hatred. And it's deeply racist what he's saying. So, you know, might as well turn the question around for once and say, hey, what's wrong with being white?
Ava, one of the reasons I think your speech was powerful, beside the context and where you gave it, was actually yourself being a young person and obviously very well spoken, very dynamic. The world is told that all people under 35 or 40 have basically accepted the propaganda and are also part of this kind of, you got to call it what it is, kind of an anti-white movement. Do you disagree with that? Do you actually think that people are awakening to the fact that being white is not a problem in and of itself?
I think so. I mean, looking at the numbers, I put this speech up on X 2 days ago, and we're looking at, I think, more than 47 million views now in less than 48 hours. Well, I think that tells you something. I think that the world is ready to have this conversation. I think that people have been terribly afraid of it, and that is why the numbers are skewed and why we think that people have all accepted this type of narrative. But I think you just need a few people who are willing, you know, to bear the consequences of saying these types of things out loud. And I've done that for so many years already that, like I said, I really don't care what they call me at this point. So I'm willing to speak the truth, and I want to speak the truth. And I think it's important to speak the truth about what's happening in Europe. And I think that the numbers reflect that a lot of people are very, very happy that somebody did exactly that.
Do you feel with young people that they are starting to awaken to the fact that this civilization, this culture has produced not just the greatest works of art and music, but science, technology, that the Judeo-Christian West civilization, with Europe being really the railhead of that, has created more good and beautiful and freedom throughout the world than all the rest of the world combined? Are young people awakening to that they actually are blessed to live in a place that's quite special, with a cultural heritage that's quite special?
I think so. I think that is definitely happening, but we have a long way to go still, because our institutions are still so infiltrated by these neo-Marxists, by the cultural relativists who will say that it's just a coincidence, right? Or that even someone like Bach was an anti-Semite, or that we need more black or female composers in the concert hall of Amsterdam. All of this type of stuff is still very much there. But I think that this woke narrative, especially with Gen Z, surprisingly enough, is not really working anymore. I think they understand that it's they call it cringe, right? They think it's nonsense. And now it's up to us to tell them, yeah, actually, this is not just a lie, you know, this woke narrative. But here, look at this plethora of amazing art, of culture that we have produced, that our continent, our people, you know, our ancestors have produced all of these centuries. It's all still there. Do not let it be destroyed.
Ava, tell us a little bit about yourself, your journey, and particularly what you're working on now, and how can people follow you and follow your work?
People can follow me on X predominantly. So that is at Eva Vlar. I am currently working on a very exciting project that I will soon be able to tell you guys more about. So stay tuned, please. In the meantime, I am doing my political commentary on X and doing these types of public speeches. So for now, stay tuned, and soon there will be a big update on my site.
Well, we want the War Room Posse to be the first to get that, so we'll stay in touch and want to make sure everybody gets it. I got to tell you, an extraordinary speech. I mean, when news sites as powerful as Remix and Zero Hedge make you the lead story, and you see the type of traffic they're driving off that, it's extraordinary. It was a speech of incredible content and power, but also your delivery was amazing. So thank you very much for speaking truth to power. The only way we're going to power through this is we need a great awakening. I think you're one of the leaders of that movement.
Thank you so much, Steve. That is a huge honor hearing that from someone like you, because I see you as exactly the same. I met your wonderful daughter, by the way, in Hungary. So it was great to see her in person too. She did great.
No, in the feedback we got from everybody went over there with how you guys on the political right are fighting, it's just incredible. We're on the winning side. This movement's ascendant. And one of the reasons it's ascendant is people like you said, for years and years and years, they have trashed you. They try to destroy you. They try to marginalize you. And you're actually, quite frankly, more powerful and more of a leader in this movement than you've ever been. So they're trying to destroy you did not work, only made you stronger.
We're going to win.
Amen. Thank you very much, Eva Vlar.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, ma'am. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Incredible. We'll put up the whole speech. Grayson Moe, we'll make sure you hear the whole thing, but incredibly, incredibly powerful. And here's the thing. There's no back down. There's no back down. And this is not white supremacy or white dominance at all. Listen to her speech. Look at the examples she gave in the speech. Incredibly, incredibly powerful. Birch Gold. Okay, turbulence. I don't think, given the first hour of the show and where we are right now, I need to convince you it's a time of turbulence. Of course, it's a fourth turning, right? You know that. The best way to make sure you've got stability in your own life is to think through everything that's going on. We try to give you access to these great companies. One of them is Birch Gold. Go talk to the guys at Birch Gold today, Philip Patrick, and think birchgold.com/Bannon. Our partnership with and working with Birch Gold is everything we put out there is free. The end of the dollar empire, the fifth installment's there. Go today. It's totally free. Download it. This is about the central bank digital currency and what that would mean to your life, what fiat money is, fiat currency, and this new digital currency. They want total control. Short commercial break. Going to Rome and Ben Harnwell next. Hey, folks, if you watch War Room, you know we talk every day about the geopolitical and other forces driving the price of gold. There are actually a couple of reasons this is happening. Let me walk through them. The cost of goods continues to rise despite interest rate controls by the Fed. Since January 2021, cost of living is up 18%. The national debt continues to skyrocket, now significantly north of $34 trillion, causing many to worry when the house of cards will come crashing down, and a presidential election year that will have massive implications on the future of this country. All this adds up to instability and uncertainty. And that is why so many Americans are turning to Birch Gold Group. Have you diversified your savings yet? Secure a portion of them with gold from Birch Gold Group. Secure a portion of your savings now with gold and do it from Birch Gold. Text Bannon, B-A-N-N-O-N, to 989898 and get your free information kit. You'll learn how to convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold, and it doesn't cost you a penny out of your pocket. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and tens of thousands of happy customers, you can count on Birch Gold also. Just text Bannon to 989898 and claim your free info kit to protect your savings in a time of turbulence, instability, and uncertainty. Do it today. Take action, action, action. Birch Gold Group. Text Bannon at 989898.
Done. Are you tired of progressive corporations and exhausted trying to keep up with all the virtue signaling when you're simply trying to buy products? Progressive corporate America continues to push messaging that further alienates conservative Americans, all while eroding the future of the American dream. It's prominent all over the country. Companies like Starbucks strong-arming their customers to support abortion. Financial services like PayPal canceling customers for their political views. Makeup companies like Maybelline making a mockery of women by supporting transgender models. And beer companies like Bud Light forcing gender ideology on you when all you want is to enjoy a cold beer. Thankfully, we don't have to fund these companies any longer with our hard-earned dollars. With Public Square, we now have a solution. It's simple. Join the movement of millions of patriotic Americans who love truth, our country, and our Constitution at publicsq.com. That's publicsq.com. Public Square is an app and website where you can get connected to tens of thousands of businesses from all different industries that share your value for life, family, and freedom. Whether you're looking to buy coffee, find a new athletic clothing that knows what a woman is, and shop for clean skincare, or simply find a new restaurant in your community that won't lecture you about your political views, publicsq.com is your resource. Public Square also offers discounts to many high-quality businesses on the platform so that you can actually receive incentive for spending money with companies that don't hate you. Public Square is free to join as consumer or a business owner, and you can get started today at publicsq.com. Remember, either as a consumer or a business owner. Download the app now. That's publicsq.com, publicsq.com.
True or false? Using your tax refund to pay off credit card debt is a smart thing. Actually, that's false. DoneWithDebt.com published a brilliant strategy designed to let you keep your hard-earned tax refund and reduce or eliminate credit card debt. Most Americans owe thousands in credit card debt. In fact, Daily Mail's got a story that 56 million Americans carry credit card debt, and that debt will take years to pay off, if you pay it off at all. Done with Debt found that filing bankruptcy is usually not the answer, and taking out loans to pay off credit cards usually increases the debt. When you engage Done with Debt, their legal experts and skilled negotiators take on the credit card companies for you. Their winning strategies are designed with one goal: solve your debt situation quickly and permanently. First things first, chat with a Done with Debt strategist and explore your solutions. Some debt fighting strategies are time sensitive, so you'll need to move quickly. For a free consultation, visit donewithdebt.com. That's donewithdebt.com. Do it today. Take action.
All this nonsense, all this spin, they can't handle the truth.
War Room Battleground with Stephen K. Bannon.
Ben Harnwell joins me from Rome. Hey, Ben, you know, the whole reason that we've conceived of the Academy of the Judeo-Christian West, of which we're now going around the country, the United States, and trying out different modules on it, is about the defense of the West, and that is worthy of defense and worthy of promulgation. It's the greatest civilization known to man. Your thoughts on Ava and the speech, and particularly what went on both in CPAC, Hungary, and then in Romania to make Europe great again. You've seen this at the very beginning. I mean, you know politics from London and Parliament. You were part of the European Parliament over there as a senior staffer. You've seen what Ava's talking about these kind of globalist elites, of which you and I talked about over a decade ago about this book, Camp of the Saints. And the Camp of the Saints book is a very rough book, and it's going to have parts to it that, and first of all, it's very hard to get now, but it's going to have parts that people are very disturbed by. You might call them even parts of the book racist or at least racialist. But the message of the book is very powerful because it's quite frankly prophetic about what's happening. Your thoughts?
Good afternoon, Steve. Yeah, well, I think what Ava gave not only in her speech, but also earlier on the show is a real masterclass, and she's clearly emerging as perhaps, I don't know, an Arnold Toynbee of our present age in distilling quite what's at stake here. It's an open question, of course, as to whether we're going to do ourselves in. I mean, Toynbee himself said that civilizations die by suicide rather than conquest. It's an open question as to whether our own civilization, the Judeo-Christian West, is going to die by suicide or by conquest. There are indications on both sides that don't look particularly favorable right now. But what I like about Ava is the fact that she's able to take these things, and she has a huge following on social media, and she's able to get, you know, perhaps we're too old, Steve, we're too old and we're too dry. But she has this huge sort of following on X, on Twitter. And I think it's absolutely great that sort of Generation Z, I think we're now on, we'll be following her on Instagram, on X and what have you, and these things. And it might encourage them to go to study and to realize that our civilization, our great civilization, which isn't perfect, it's not perfect, but it has been in the whole history of mankind, and I absolutely believe this, it has been the civilization which is the greatest thing that mankind has ever devised, not intentionally, but devised for the maximal prospering of the human person, of human dignity. Of course, the reason for that is because at the very heart of our culture is cult, as John Paul II used to say. And at the heart of cult in the Judeo-Christian West, we have the person of Jesus Christ. How a culture founded on that luminous being, that luminous divine being, isn't going to be the best that mankind has ever devised, I don't know. I don't think it's possible. That's why I think the Judeo-Christian West is so great. It's not an ethnic thing, Steve, as you were saying. I give away. It's not an ethnic thing. Yeah. It's because our civilization is founded on the teachings of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, that it has provided on so many fronts, on art, culture, literature, law, the equality before the law, the rule of law, all these things, that the idea that justice is blind, all these things come from fundamentally from the fact of one single person, and that is Jesus Christ himself.
I've got and I want to get to this Ukraine thing, but I need to spend this time with you on this, because you talk about it in the foundations of the Judeo-Christian West. I mean, it shouldn't be lost on people, particularly people know that the early church just not was out of Israel. That was the beginning of it, and Judea and Palestine, but it was, I guess Palestine wasn't a thing then, but Judea. But it was also came out of the Middle East, out of Syria, out of North Africa. I mean, St. Augustine was a Berber, right? So it's not directly, oh, this is all white. This is a white religion. It was based upon something much deeper than ethnicity. The thing that concerns me today when I hear Ava talk about a white Christian Europe, or a Europe that is embracing Christianity, and that's one of its revivals. You know, I go to London, and you go there, and you see these magnificent churches, not like in Europe and not like in Italy, but the Christopher Wren churches, which are quite simple but powerful, and they're all empty. And you go to Rome, and the art and the music, but there's these magnificent churches literally on every block, sometimes a couple on a block. You never see anything like it. And as you know, when you and I go to Mass there, oftentimes the priests are from sub-Saharan Africa, because they're not getting the vocations in Italy among the church. The churches are virtually empty. Three quarters of the attendees, Ben, when you and I go, are foreigners, right? And I don't mean foreigners coming in from the United States. I mean people from sub-Saharan Africa and the Middle East that are devoutly Catholic. So when you talk about – when Ava talks about a rejuvenation, a revitalization that could save Europe, and it'll be Christian in the United States, I can see how that can happen, because we do have a quite powerful evangelical church, and you have a quite powerful yet small traditional Catholic church that are the building blocks to do this. I'm not sure I see that in Europe. I don't know Europe as well as you do, and you've dedicated your life to this very topic. When Ava talks about that, do you believe that can actually happen?
Yeah, well, I think it is happening. Look, let's go back to Arnold Toynbee, who's great. I mean, he's a great historian of civilizations, the great historian of civilizations, or perhaps even Christopher Dawson as well. But to Toynbee specifically, he had this, his probably most famous quote was that of the 21 notable human civilizations, 19 of them had perished, not from conquest from without, but from moral decay from within. And that's what we see now. I mean, Europe, perhaps the Judeo-Christian West is probably the 22nd civilization in human history. And we're, you know, as I say, are we dying from moral decay from within? Absolutely. Are we dying from conquest from without? Absolutely. These two things, I think Ava even said it, it's not either or on this one. And you can see this on every single metric. I actually think, look, in terms of civilizational vocations, I have a particular view when it comes both to the United States and to Europe. I think America's vocation on the world stage from its founding onwards is to show the whole world how liberty can prosper on every single metric. That is a unique vocation that America and Americans have been called to do. To show how constitutionally limited government all the things involved in America's founding, the idea that you need to have a moral people to uphold the precepts of democracy as well. All these things, I think Americans are called to show and the whole world how liberty can work. And I think, you know, the American ideal is the very apotheosis, to use that word, of the Judeo-Christian West. That is to say, in the whole Judeo-Christian West, I don't think there's been a civilization that has assumed its values as coherently as America. Europe has a different vocation on the world stage. You said that Christianity is a Middle Eastern religion, and of course it absolutely is, but its influence was most on a civilization was most noted and most felt, had most permeated the Western European, the Western Europe on the European continent. That's where the idea of Christianity had really sort of flourished to its maximum ability. And the vocation right now at this stage, because I don't think we're going to make it in Europe, and I said this before on the show, I think America might have it within itself to overcome its present challenges and so on. I don't think that that's still possible in Europe for a number of reasons. Our role in Europe, and you know, you mentioned Saint Augustine, we have a similar dynamic now. Saint Augustine, probably I would say the greatest philosopher, the greatest theologian, and in the whole history of Christendom, he was writing in North Africa, right, basically as pagan Europe declined to the to the barbarian forces. And this was like an epoch world-shattering event. People can understand it. And St. Augustine made sense of it all. And instead of this being sort of an opportunity, I think where we're talking here, sort of the early 5th century, instead of the collapse of paganism being and the great Roman Empire blaming Christianity, St. Augustine was actually able to show how important Christianity was as a religion and how Rome's collapse wasn't due to the fact that Rome had abandoned its old gods. Europe has a similar vocation right now. We are going to collapse as a civilization. I think that ought to be clear if we're not going to descend into happy talk and just foundationless optimism here. What we have a role to do, like St. Augustine, as our civilization here in Europe collapses, is show the world, and specifically America, what it must not do if it wants to survive as a people and as a culture. So we have two different vocations, continental Europe and the United States. As I say, I think America might be able to make it through. It's not certain. In Europe, I don't think we will. But as we sink under the waters, under the waves, I hope we're able to convince the people in America who are fighting for America's fundamental principles and values. I hope we're able to give the fillip necessary so that they can take our demise forward and use that as the illustration of what will happen to America if those who hate it from within succeed.
Ben, I've known you for a long time. It's one of the most powerful things I've ever heard you say. I want to go back and just hit rewind for a second. You're saying it's pretty obvious to you, and this is given your experience in London and in Brussels and now in Rome, that European civilization, and as great as Ava and what's happening at CPAC Hungary and Orban and all this, you actually see it at a point of no return, that it will collapse. It's at a point of no return. There's no major event that you think that could reverse what's happened in Europe?
I think it's too far gone. But you know, the peoples, the ethnicities, if you will continue in one form or another. But what we call the Judeo-Christian element, we talk about the Judeo-Christian tradition. Of course, let's be specific. There's a Judeo-Christian tradition, but the religion is Christianity, right? This culture built on Christianity is going to collapse, and the reason is because we are no longer a Christian tradition, a Christianity based collection of societies. We are post Christian, and that's really absolutely important because at some point, you know, let's go for 1968 specifically in Europe. At some point, right across the European continent, the decision was actually made to decouple the countries, the one country by country, from Christianity and to go more sort of in a secular in a secular basis. So what we're talking about here is are we really going to fight to defend a post-Christian society, which, as far as I'm concerned, is worth absolutely zero, or not? And we're not fighting to defend it. And what we can see taking, and when it comes to culture, Steve, when it comes to religion, but I'm an absolutist. I believe in Jesus Christ. I think all the other religions are fake. When it comes to culture, I'm absolutely Darwinian. Let the strongest culture win. And we have enfeebled ourselves so catastrophically as a culture. There's nothing in it worth defending. And that's why you see the architects of our demise have so little resistance, because who's going to fight to the large ditch for a bunch of progressive platitudes which are self-evidently false? Nobody. What we have, this comes back to the point of the fact that our civilization is under attack from without, is we have the emerging sort of presence of Islam, and that is a culture founded on Islam is far more stronger than a post-Christian culture founded on meaningless secularism. And we're going to give way. We are giving way, and we are going to give way. And every day on this show, Steve, we are illustrating how this epoch-changing transformation is taking place. I have to repeat this. I believe in Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is true God, right? And religion and faith founded on his revelation is absolutely true. Islam is not a true religion. Muhammad was not the prophet of Allah. It's not a supernaturally true religion, but a religion founded on his teachings is far stronger than what we have today in the post-Christian sphere, which is basically platitudes based on nothing. That's why I think it's curtains for the European continent.
Was it the trauma? Did the elites do this decoupling of Christianity? Because if you think about it, post-World War II was really the strength of the American church. We had been the quote unquote, the victors in World War II. The underlying ordinary person was the key to that. You had a rising and strong Catholic church. You had a strong traditional Protestant church, this kind of Christian. It was the 1950s up into the 60s were the rise or kind of the penultimate of that. But at the same time, it's decoupling. Was it the trauma of World War I and World War II, because we had very little to none of the physical trauma? We clearly had all the psychological trauma of the combat casualties and the agony of the wounded and all that, but in the missing. But in World War I and II, the devastation of Europe itself, is that what caused the elites to basically flip and say we have to decouple from this?
Well, Second World War certainly shifted the dynamic, the imperial dynamic, from the British Empire to the United States. And that was a project 50 years in the making in and of itself. But often people will refer to the First World War as the element that on a psychological level, we fundamentally lost our innocence that we'd preserved for 19 centuries. Just a massacre, the meaningless massacre. Because, of course, the Second World War was a war over something important. The First World War was not. The First World War was really just an absolute meat grinder over very little. You had the prides of the nations combating one another. And in a sense, we lost our sense of innocence. That's not original to Harnell, but I'm just saying what other historians have noted. I think Yeats, the poet Yeats, talked about the loss of the ceremony of innocence in his poem, the Antichrist. But you can see it. You can see it. It's psychological. And, of course, people who lived through that came of age through that, their parents. That was sort of basically what, and the Second World War, of course, that's really what came to fruition in the 1960s. Now, you mentioned the 1950s and in the American context, the Catholic Church in the United States in the 1950s, before the so-called Second Vatican Council, was so strong. Demographers had basically said, if the current trends of conversion from Protestantism to Catholicism continued, within 100 years, there wouldn't be any Protestants left, because the Catholic Church was so strong at that point. And of course, what happened? Steve, in the Catholic Church, at the national, cultural, political level, what happened? We stabbed ourselves in the back. Or to be precise, we were stabbed in the back by alien philosophies. And we're living with these consequences sort of 70 years onwards. We're suffering with these consequences. And if it's bad for us, God help our kids and the next generation of what they're going to go into. Look, Peter, it's coming through in at one poll after another, Steve. This is the first time, basically, since records began, both in the UK, but also in the United States, where parents think that their kids are not going to have a higher standard of living than they had. And there was generation after generation after generation said, look, things are getting better. Our kids will have a better standard of living than us. That's no longer the case. I think on a deep psychological level, we realize that the fan has incoming.
Last thing, this will only take, I only get a minute for this, but didn't St. Benedict see this in the Dark Ages, and that's why he argued for a smaller church, a church, but of centers of really lived Christianity, and that would see us through the Dark Age. And of course, Pope Benedict saw the same thing. Could that get us through smaller communities of lived Christianity that gets us through this new Dark Age?
I'm not a fan of Ratzinger. I'm not remotely a fan of Ratzinger. St. Benedict, the founder of Western monasticism, certainly had a certain genius. And of course, St. Benedict is considered to be one of the founders of Europe as a culture, as a religion. We're having founded Western monasticism, which basically was a key component in the development and growth for well over 1,000 years, 1,500 years across all the European countries. I think basically, look, the answer to that question, what is going to save Christendom? No, what is going to save Christianity are people who believe in Jesus Christ and will put that belief first in everything that they do on every single level, on every single metric. That's not talking about saving the idea of Christianity as a cultural force. It's talking about passing on that saving, the saving faith, the grace of that saving faith from generation to generation on the micro level rather than the macro level. On the macro level, it's so bad, Steve, here in Rome to see the negative impact that the presence of an unchristian Catholic Church is having on Italy is absolutely horrific. That's a subject we could do a whole show on, that just how bad things are in Italy. Yeah. Thanks to the presence of this organization.
Ben, hang over a second. Lou Dobbs is next. We're back at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning live. Ben, what's your social media? Where do people go get all your great thinking?
Thanks so much. Getter at Harnwell. And folks, I have some fantastic posts at the top of my feed right now. At Getter on Harnwell. Thanks, Steve. God bless.
We'll get it right. Thank you. Lou Dobbs is next. We're back at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Make sure you go to Birch Gold. Get the End of the Dollar Empire. Download it today. Birchgold.com/Bannon. See you tomorrow morning.
Tax Network USA is pure war room for solving your IRS tax problems. If you owe back taxes, COVID was your lucky break. Tax court shut down, the IRS paused, and you skated. Well, baby, that party is over. The IRS is adding 20,000 enforcement agents, basically tax cops. Honest, hardworking Americans like you are in the crosshairs. Rich people have tax lawyers and you don't. You'll pay up plus interest and penalties. Tax USA Network has brilliant war room type strategies designed to solve your IRS problem quickly in your favor. Never call the IRS yourself. You're at their mercy. You could sit on hold for 6 to 8 hours and get hung up on. Grind you for all your back taxes, plus interest and penalties. Tax Network USA attorneys have a preferred direct line to the IRS. They know which agents to talk to and who to avoid. If they get difficult agent, hey, they just call a different agent. Tax Network USA learned of a limited time special IRS offer. The IRS is willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. Find out if you qualify before it's too late. Schedule your free confidential consultation with Tax Network USA. They've resolved over $1 billion in tax debts. Think about that. They've resolved over $1 billion in tax debts. They offer a best-in-class client satisfaction guarantee. Now call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000. And visit Tax
Network USA. That's TNUSA.com/Bannon. TNUSA.com/Bannon. Make sure you take action on this today. This IRS grind is only going to get much worse. War Room at checkout to save 67%. And do it again. War Room Health, all one word, warroomhealth.com. Go there today. You need, if you're going to be part of the posse, you need a strong heart. You need a lion's heart. How we're going to do that is with Salty. Go there. Do it today. Check it out.